Morning, Paul. Ken Weeb, Sportsnet.ca. Quick apologies based on our sight lines. Can you confirm a 3-1 final for Team White? And we think it was Bourque and Perreault with the last two goals, but what did you have on the ice?
No, no. I thought Hark had the third one. No. I think the score is accurate. There's some dispute amongst the players, Ken.
Looked like a left-handed shot to us.
There's a story there.
Okay.
There's a story. You got to dig deep on it, man. 3-1. Yeah, there's some dispute on who touched it last.
Okay, fair enough. Just overall thoughts on seeing your guys in a scrimmage situation for the first time.
Yeah, it's important to fairly early get them. We didn't want a scrimmage in the first few days until we felt we had gotten their conditioning's not where it just they'd gotten back into some pace and some tempo so they could apply that to the scrimmage. So that was what I was looking for more than anything else, was a little bit of that pace and tempo. That was good. The execution's not there yet, but we don't expect it to be. And we, you know, in a normal training camp, you don't feel that the execution's there till the last 3 or 4 days before you get after it. So to get a little bit more pressure on a puck carrier, to get them in an environment that's more game-like with their hands and their feet, that was the whole goal. It was two 20-minute running time periods with three lines, so they got enough reps in. So I was pleased with the final. Looked like we got through it healthy. I think some guys that there are players on your team that you won't notice as much in a practice that rely on that game environment to excel with their games. We saw a little bit of that too. So it was good.
Thank you.
Hi, Coach. Tim Campbell, NHL.com today. Not going for the hat trick today.
Appreciate that.
Wondering why your penalty killing from, you cited the date February 1st. It appears to be a pretty important turning point. Why from February 1st on was it one of the best penalty kills in the NHL?
I think that I also referenced it was one of the months where Connor, you know, November and February for me, he was just elite. That's the key piece to it. So much of our entire situation this year was based on available personnel, right? We had, and then when you add at the end, you add DeMello and you add Eakin. Those are both guys that you'll use on your penalty kill. We shift some personnel around, but we got some penalty killers back into our lineup. We got real aggressive. Our confidence grew with it. But I felt that a number of our situations this year analytically were defined more by our injuries and who we had in the lineup. So we got a little bit healthier. Connor's game took off. We added two pieces that both can kill penalties, win faceoffs, and because of those things coming together, our confidence grew.
And then just to follow that up quickly, what's your level of confidence then that you can resume that or replicate that when we start again here?
I think it would be the exact same level of confidence I have with every other piece of our game, right? We like the structure that we have in place with the players that we have in place. So if we get to healthy and we get to right, we should have, I'm as confident in that as I am in any other part of our game. I think we got a day off tomorrow. Everybody took it early. Is that what's going on here?
Just dealing with some technical hiccups. Paul, it's Sarah from TSN. Just wondering with Connor Hellebuck getting the named as a Vezina finalist today, what is it that stood out to you most about his game this season and the importance that he played in your team being able to play in a play-in series?
Well, we'll start with that. And, you know, you get a 4-month kind of pause in your year. You forget, maybe, as we all did, that, you know, we get into the season with four of the six blue liners that we had last year out of our lineup and then lost Brian very early. So some really important pieces to being a good defensive hockey team. And we needed to buy some time to kind of get our feet and get the new guys broken in, get the belief back. and that month of November he had did it. So that would be the section where you, it's either going to go, it could get better like it did, or it could get a lot worse. He really excelled that month and we built an awful lot of confidence. So that was the month for me that saving the season isn't the right, giving us, isn't the right phrase, giving us a chance to develop with some confidence and stay in the fight and develop a certain scrappiness, if you will. Definitely resilience is an accurate word for our team this year. He would have been the leader in that. You know, and I hate just mentioning on a couple of guys, but when you look at what Blake Wheeler sacked for, what he was willing to do and still perform, I thought Connor was as well. Like, he had good numbers clearly in that month, but overall his numbers were going to be down a little bit. He's just going to see more pucks. He was going to see a higher level of risk just with the change to our blue line. So he gave us a chance. And then I take his, if you take the band of the quality of his play, you know, at his tougher times when things weren't going our way, he was still a really good goalie. And then at his times when he was, let's say, at the top of his game, he was absolutely elite in the league. And that would be the growth that you would hope for from all your players. But certainly, I think that is the model of the finest players in the National Hockey League. You know, you play 82 games, they're not all going to be great. But when you look at the list of games where maybe you weren't at your best, you're still a really good hockey player. And then you list of games when you're at your best, you're amongst the very, very best. I think Connor moved into that.
Are there any moments or games in particular from the season that stand out to you?
Well, I mean, it was the game in San Jose, right? What was it, 52 shots, all from within 3 feet. That was... You get off the bench some nights and you think your goalie stole you the game. You feel good about it. But that one, you didn't have to wait till you got off the bench. That was halfway through the second period. Your goalie had, you know, given you a chance to win. But the confidence boost there, right? Like, I think that's the one we go back-to-back into Vegas off that game and win. And it was you know, Lowry got into a fight. Like, there was some really good team building, and I look at that game as a really important one. He was just spectacular.
Thank you.
Hi, Paul. It's Murat from The Athletic. Got to ask a numbers question at some point this camp. So you mentioned at the beginning of the year, rush defense was something that you really were focusing on, and it looks like the Jets did very well in terms of rush defense. How does a team genuinely, how do you change, how do you adapt, how does that improvement happen?
Well, you would specifically look at, you know, when you start to quantify what a rush is. First, you have to qualify what a rush is. You know, entries across your line. And we would say, how does that happen from the offensive zone? And then what happens when you hit that line? So you would find, and part of it is just style of personnel. When you look at the defenseman that left and the defenseman that came in, we wouldn't have pinched nearly as hard. Our D weren't nearly as aggressive in the offensive zone and started keeping the pucks in. So there's a cost to that in some ways, because when we don't have the same kind of offensive zone time, where with the other blue, you know, there's more risk in their game. They'd pinch heavier down, but they also had a skill level that would allow them to keep pucks, which means our zone time was really, really good. And that's come off a bit. But because you're not pinching quite as aggressively, your numbers are always better at the offensive line, which in turn makes your numbers better at your own line. And then it was a very strong emphasis on our gap, depending on the analytic. I guess I'm not sure where you get yours, but we would be elite in that as well. When the puck crosses our blue line, if you measure the distance between the puck and the nearest defender, we would be at the very top of the National Hockey League in that. So those would be two areas that you want to be good at. Don't give up as many rushes where you have to give ice, and put a high premium on being able to hold your line.
And then once things do get into the own zone, and you mentioned personnel at different times as well, I mean, the defensive zone time was certainly there. I'm wondering what impact a defensive structure, whether it's protecting between the dots like an old Barry Trotzism or what have you, what role does defensive structure have in the goaltender's performance at the end of the day?
Yeah, the predictability of the shot and the ability to clear the net front would be the two areas, right? Maybe three. So if you can define, if you're going to give up a shot and you can define it better, that it's not going to go from one side of the ice to the other to an open man, your goaltender is going to have a chance. If he can see the shot, so how well you clear your net front, in order to, it's not just a matter of, you know, how big and strong you are. You have to be able to think, you have to be able to skate, you have to anticipate a body coming to the net front, and then you've got to get out and make early contact. So deny that net front and then any of the pucks. And sometimes pucks that lay around the crease, then at times it is a size issue, but I would argue against myself and saying that Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey are really good at that. So the structure matters. How you, your philosophy on how you want to handle that. So there are teams that are pretty passive in the D zone. They don't push the points very hard. We want to eliminate as much as we can from the slot, like everybody else. So we don't want to spend a whole lot of time there. In order to get out of your end, you need to kill play. And it's usually by one of your defensemen, right? They get out, they get a puck stopped, and then you've created a battle that allows you the change of possession. You get the puck back. We knew that we wouldn't get quite as many kill plays. We wouldn't get the puck stopped quite as much. So we knew that we would have a higher number in terms of D zone time. We don't like it. And we've gotten better at it, but I think really encouraged our forwards, and it's a challenge, right? We've got five or six very offensive-minded guys that didn't make the National Hockey League defending, but they grind at it. You know, they're working out, trying to get pucks out. Our ability to get pucks out along the walls has improved. That's a real challenge for us over the years. It's usually a function of having young wingers, and it's a skill that's learned. So those all things go together. We know we're going to spend a little more time in our end than we did possibly in the past. We want to be comfortable in that situation, but we certainly want to improve and spend as little time as possible.
Last one from me is, speaking of those young offensive forwards, I think I saw a stat that Winnipeg scored the most or close to the most goals off of the rush this season. And I'm wondering, it has to go beyond them simply being very good. What goes into being a strong rush offense, Keith?
Well, it depends on what stat that you're looking at. What do you have an absolute number on that? That they said the number of goals that we scored off the rush?
I don't trust my memory to tell you.
Okay. Well, there's a couple. There's the rush where the puck goes to the net. There's a rush when a pass goes across. You know, we've got some speed, right? So we can put pucks to that. That's a number I don't love. I don't think that we've generated the offense. Now, Rat, those numbers changed drastically from January 1st on. So we were far, far more dangerous from January 1st on the rush than we were at the start. And for me, prior to January 1st, and I'll go back almost the entire year before, I didn't like our rush offense. I didn't think we drove enough pucks to the net. And we've got enough speed and skill that they can make plays off the rush. But I'm going to say that we're going to be at the top of the league on one of those stats. When we don't shoot the puck off the rush and we make a play, we're at the top of the league at scoring goals, which is wonderful, but that number is really small. So it's like winning first prize in an ugly contest. Like, it's not really something. So it's great that you score because you don't shoot the puck, you pass the puck. But if you score 10 goals in the entire year doing that, there's no payoff. So we'd gotten better at of getting pucks to the net, driving pucks to the net. But some of what we do off the rush is completely talent and skill based. We got enough speed and we can make plays at a high rate.
Thanks very much.
Paul, Mike McIntyre, so you know what that means. Last question of the...
I appreciate that. But you were here yesterday, so I felt like I got ripped off.
No, I actually was here yesterday. I just decided not to ask a question. Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
Don't take it personally.
I wouldn't dare.
Just one question on Connor Hellebuyck. We asked actually Wade Flaherty about this, and he thought that not starting that third game of the year on Long Island... I think in Wade's words, lit a bit of a fire under Connor, being the personality that he is to you know, sit on the bench two straight games. Was that your intention at the time to light a fire under him, or was that a maybe unintended development that ended up happening?
I think that Connor feeling challenged in that was a solid byproduct of what I was trying to do, was respect the performance of Lauren, right? He goes into Jersey and were in real trouble and made a couple of big saves at the end of that game, and we come back and win. So those guys, I mean, if Lauren doesn't go back in that game, I don't want to say I've lost him, but how can he feel that he's going to get a chance? Clearly, Connor's our number one guy, but there has to be a point in the time of the year and there's all where Lauren comes in and makes big saves and helps us win hockey games. So I felt that Lauren deserved to go in, and they needed to feel the respect of the coaching staff to respect the good work that he did. So it was kind of both. It wasn't a lead. I wasn't sitting around looking, you know, we're 2-3 games into the year going, how am I going to light a fire under Connor Hellebuck? Like he's a competitive guy. I'm not worried about him being wired up, but I knew he wouldn't be very happy about it. And that I didn't think that was a bad thing. You know, there's guys at times, goalies, players that struggle, that you kind of let them play themselves through it because they need help, right? You let them get through it. And then there are times when a guy is struggling and he needs just a change. He needs a shift of mentality. So the driver of that was LB's play. I wanted him to feel respected for it, but it was a positive byproduct knowing Connor's personality that he wasn't very happy about it.
Right, and the way he responded, you guys go into Pittsburgh where you hadn't won in ages, and he has a strong game, home opener a couple nights later. He obviously responded as good as you could have expected, or maybe better.
I think he probably responded exactly the way we thought he would based on just, I mean, the numbers that he puts up after he gets pulled or after he has a game that he doesn't like. I mean, he's a rebound guy. Connor Hellebuck doesn't sulk if things don't go his way. He gets a little ticked off, and he's also not a guy that runs around pointing fingers. Truly, I just know that there's a lot of goalies that never feel they make a mistake, right? That if it's in the back of their net, it's not their fault. And Connor is unusual because he's at the other end of the spectrum, but it doesn't beat him down. He thinks that he should have. He's not saying that. It's his fault, but you know what, a 2-on-0 cross ice bar down, he's looking at the video because he's pretty sure he should have been able to get that. There's a confidence there about him, but it doesn't weigh him down. So he has this inner fight, this inner power that lets him think he should stop every single puck. But when that doesn't happen, and clearly it doesn't happen for anybody, it doesn't weigh on him. It just fires him up.
Thanks, Paul.
Take care. Okay, guys.